Good morning. Our first case this morning is United States against Riddle. Counsel for the defense, you may proceed.
Good morning, and may it please the court. I am William Fishbach of the Ledbetter Law Firm, and along with Captain Pam Barillo, who represents the appellant in this case, Private E1, Carey and Riddle. Appellant's pleas to all charges and specifications were improper and should therefore be set aside by this court because the military judge did not explain or discuss the potential lack of mental responsibility, did not satisfy himself that counsel had evaluated the viability of the defense, and did not elicit facts from appellants that negated the defense. The standard of review for this court is de novo, and that is because there is a substantial basis in law to question the appellant's guilty plea, and that was recently reinforced by this court in United States versus Anavin, where it stated that a substantial basis in law existed for questioning the guilty plea, where an accused knowingly admits facts that meet all the elements of an offense, but nonetheless is not advised of an available defense or has stated matters inconsistent with the plea that are not resolved by the military judge. Now, in Shaw, this court stated that when a military judge is confronted with the potential for a lack of mental responsibility defense, the question of whether further inquiry is required as a matter of law is a contextual determination. Accordingly, I would ask that this court view this case in the following context. Private Riddle's diagnosis with bipolar disorder is a stipulated fact in this case. Her bipolar disorder was of such a severity that it required her to be an inpatient in a mental health care institution and to be taken at least one known antipsychotic drug. Furthermore, her commitment to a mental health care institution and her placement on this cocktail of antipsychotic drugs.
Now, is this, would you agree that this case tests what, where on a continuum between Shaw and Harris this appellant might reside, or do you think this is to one side of Shaw or one side of Harris or et cetera? Is that a fair way to frame it?
Yes, sir. I would agree that it does appear in our case law that there is a bit of a spectrum with Shaw at one end and Harris at the other. And so far, Harris has essentially been the gold standard at its end of the spectrum. I will, of course, concede that unlike Harris, we don't have at least one 706 board indicating that the appellant lacked mental responsibility.
Did the defense counsel request the 706 board?
It is unclear from the record.
Have you, as the appellant, alleged IAC on this case for failure to request the 706 board?
She has not, Your Honor. But if I could maybe go back to your question, Judge Baker, I would like to point out a couple of circumstances where I think the appellant's case actually goes beyond some of the facts in Harris.
Well, I want to ask you a question about the 706 board, if you wouldn't mind first, which is whether it's clear from the record that the defense counsel did or did not request a 706 board. Would you agree that it is clear from the record that the defense counsel was very clear to the military judge that she believed that the appellant could confidently plead and that there was no issue with respect to her mental responsibility?
I don't know that I would go that far, Judge Ryan, because all we know from the record is this. We have a statement from the military judge where he says, your defense counsel assures me that you're okay to plead today. It appears there was an 802 before trial, some type of off-the-record discussion. We don't know what was said at that. We don't know what defense counsel's proffered reasons were. We just have a summary by the military judge of apparently an off-the-record discussion. So we really don't know what the defense counsel's reasoning or thought process
was. Well, the defense counsel was present during that summary, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And didn't object to the rendition given by the military judge as to what had transpired at that off-the-record 802 conference?
That is true, but once again, I would just point out that the judge's summary was very conclusory in nature, just that she was competent to stand trial. It didn't state defense counsel's reasons or analysis for reaching that conclusion.
Is there anything in the record that indicates a lack of mental responsibility at the time the offenses were committed?
Yes, there is, Justice, because you look at the temporal nexus between the commitment for medications and the misconduct. That is, the misconduct starts in January of 2007 and essentially continues until April of 2007. Immediately upon terminating her AWOL in April of 2007, She is then committed to a mental health care institution and then placed on all of these antipsychotic drugs.
Is there any indication that the commitment, that her mental state during the commitment was such that she, had the offense been committed at that time, was not responsible?
There's no direct evidence of that in the record.
Well, then, a fortiori, how can you argue that at the time of the offenses, there was?
Well, I believe, as this court recognized in the Shaw case, that bipolar disorder, it comes in varying degrees. That is, you can have a mild case of it or a...
She stipulated that there's wrongful use in her stipulation of fact.
Yes, Your Honor, but...
So,
I don't believe that that goes to her mental responsibility.
Okay, well, I think that's because you're conflating the two-part test. I mean, there's a two-part test with respect to whether someone has a lack of mental responsibility. One part is that they have a severe, that they have a mental issue, right? The bipolar disease, the depression. The other is that they're unable to appreciate the nature and quality of wrongfulness of the conduct because of the mental issue. Okay, so focus on the second part and tell us what evidence there is in the record about that. Because from the stipulation of fact, acknowledging that it was wrongful, to the Providence inquiry, where she repeatedly told the military judge, you know, that she knew it was wrong, that she could have not done it if she wanted to, it's hard to see where you find this defense.
Your Honor, I would like to point out that the two offenses that she pled guilty to, both of them, at least the elements explained to her, had an element of wrongfulness, that if she had to admit her conduct was wrongful in circumstances. And most of her statements to that end were essentially her admitting the elements of the offenses and not her disclaiming the defense of lack of responsibility. As far as focusing in on that second prong of the lack of mental responsibility defense, the evidence here, it's, I think, very strongly inferred by the record that given that she was institutionalized immediately after her course of misconduct, I think it is a very safe inference for this court to draw that her bipolar disorder immediately following her commitment had gotten to such a degree that she could not appreciate the quality and nature of her actions, and she could not appreciate the difference between right and wrong. And that is, after all, the reason to institutionalize somebody, because they simply can't function in ordinary society. Many people in and outside of the military function with bipolar disorder. It's when that bipolar disorder prevents you from functioning properly and prevents you from knowing precisely what you're doing.
It doesn't necessarily follow from, quote, not being able to function, at least on a short-term basis, that one can't appreciate what one's doing and the nature of the offense, does it?
I would say that under these circumstances that it is a very fair inference for this court to draw. And once again, we're not talking about...
Well, we it may be a fair inference, but the burden's on the appellant to show it.
I would agree with that, Your Honor, but I would also point out that we're not talking about whether or not she successfully proved the defense, as was the case in United States versus Martin. The question before this court is whether or not there was the existence of an apparent incomplete defense. And I would argue that based on these fair inferences, there was certainly an appearance of a complete defense, which therefore triggers the military judge's obligation to delve further.
Counsel, to focus on then where you perceive the allegation of error in this case. That is, there are at least three possibilities. One is that there was a lack of mental responsibility. And as you've just indicated, you're not arguing that in this case, that the record demonstrates a lack of mental responsibility. Is that correct?
I'm arguing that the facts and circumstances of the record certainly raised both elements.
But you're, just to be, to go through each one, you're not arguing that this record demonstrates that there was a defense of lack of mental responsibility such that the charge should be dismissed.
I'm not arguing that she successfully proved
okay.
the defense.
Okay. Secondly, there's the possibility that the evidence was sufficient to trigger the military judge's obligation to require a 706 board to inquire into her mental responsibility at the time of the offense. And third, there's a possibility that the record was such that it triggered the military judge's responsibility to make a further inquiry prior to determining whether the plea was provident or whether a 706 board should be ordered. So among those last two, which are you arguing? That the judge was obligated to have a 706 board or that he was obligated to make a further inquiry?
The last one, Your Honor.
Okay. So you're not even arguing at this stage that there was sufficient evidence to require a 706 board. You're arguing that the judge, the error that you're alleging is that he didn't make the inquiry that was required into the accused with respect to the understanding of the defense. Is that it?
No and yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Certainly arguing that the judge had a duty to delve further into the matter. I'm not conceding that there was not enough evidence to order a 706 board. I think that would have been certainly the prudent thing for the military judge to do in this case, given that this was an Army case and the Army's own case law in the form of the United States versus Collins had previously held that mental examinations conducted pursuant to administrative separations using this form, the DA Form 3822, had said that these really don't cut the mustard as far as doing a mental evaluation for purposes of the court.
Okay. So while you're not conceding that, then, is that necessary to your argument that there was sufficient evidence to order a 706 board, or are you then in a position where even if the court concludes that there was not sufficient evidence to order a 706 board, there was sufficient information in the record to require a further inquiry by the military judge so that the military judge could determine whether to order a 706 board or whether to accept the plea as provident?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Thank you.
There was sufficient evidence and information known to the military judge that certainly triggered his responsibility to delve further.
And you had identified some of that before, but you were talking about the 706 board, et cetera. So specifically with respect to the requirement to make an inquiry, what specific facts in the record are you relying on?
At the risk of repeating myself, just the severity of her condition, that is, we look at the cases that have come before this court, Shaw and Glenn and Inominant. None of those cases involved an accused who was institutionalized for their behavior. In fact, the Harris, once again, the proverbial gold standard case, the oddest thing that he did was polish the floor of his cell with a sock. There's no evidence he was ever institutionalized. Glenn was in the hospital, but he was in the hospital for a drug overdose and not for mental problems. So her mental problems were so acute and they had reached such a volume that she had to be placed in a mental health care institution, and that alone should have
But the judge knew that, and the judge, isn't the judge asking about that? What the judge says, did you understand what you were doing when you went AWOL? Yes, sir. Okay, now I realize that you've had some psychiatric issues. I guess apparently blah, blah, blah. Although I have to say for the record, you appear to be extremely articulate and very alert today. Is that not the judge exploring the situation? This isn't just, did you do it? Yes, good. Get out of here. This is the judge testing, is it not? Where do you really fault the judge? What question didn't the judge ask?
The judge simply...
Or what should he... Sorry, I'll let you answer in a second. First 29 questions. What should have the judge asked, and what should have prompted the defense counsel to say something? I mean...
Your Honor, the judge should have simply explained the defense of lack of mental responsibility, defined it for private riddle, and ascertained whether or not it applied, giving her an opportunity to either disclaim the defense on the record or withdraw her plea.
Isn't that partly what defense counsel is supposed to do? Are we assuming this is a competent defense counsel? Since you have not filed an IAC claim, so you're not alleging that this is an incompetent defense counsel. We have to presume it's a competent defense counsel.
We are not alleging IAC, and I would agree with you that the law states that defense counsel is presumed competent. We don't know a lot about what defense counsel did in terms of evaluation because, once again, all these discussions took place off the record. I will say that at the end of the day, when it comes to providence, that's the military judge's responsibility. I don't think that we can force that on defense counsel and say that they have an affirmative obligation to come forth and salvage any problem.
Well, counsel, isn't there also a presumption that people are mentally responsible?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, and just let me finish my question. Can you point to me where in the record, even today, there's any statement by the appellant or any information from which we can derive the second prong of the test, which would entitle her to this defense, which is that she was unable to appreciate the nature and quality of wrongfulness of her acts as a result of the mental disease or condition? Yes. Where in the record is that?
I would just start off by pointing out that all presumptions are, of course, rebuttable. The evidence in this case which rebuts that presumption is the fact that bipolar disorder, by its very nature, interferes with your ability to distinguish right from wrong, and that's actually discussed in former Chief Judge Crawford's dissent in the Harris case. The fact that her commitment was so close in time to the offenses also seems.
Okay, so that's what you have, which is the nature of her disease and that she was committed.
And it was so close in time to the offenses.
Okay. Can you answer my second question, which is where in the record, anywhere today, is there a statement from the appellant or evidence that she ever said or has ever stated, even today, that because of her mental disease or defect, she was unable to appreciate what she was doing and that it was wrong?
Your Honor, there is no explicit statement to that effect during the court martial. In a fair attempt to answer your question, there is a statement in her 1105 matters by defense counsel that it interfered with her ability of her decision-making process. But I will concede there is no direct statement from Private Riddle in the course of the plea inquiry where she states that.
You attempt to argue in your brief that the fact that she was so familiar with drug lingo and was somewhat flippant with the judge indicates a lack of mental responsibility. You also argue that the fact that she advised another person to smoke dope to relieve morning sickness is an indication of lack of mental responsibility. With regard to the last, hasn't that passed into folk wisdom in some circles in this country? Didn't they hold a referendum in California on this very question? How is that an indication of a lack of, it may be bad medicine, but how is it an indication of a lack of mental responsibility?
Yes, Your Honor. I see that my time has expired here. I can go ahead and
answer. You can take the time necessary to answer Judge Stuckey's question.
Thank you, Your Honor. It's not so much that she was familiar with it, but her cavalier attitude towards it. One of the factors put forth in Shaw, or essentially the second Shaw factor, asks us to analyze whether or not the appellant's conduct during the plea raised concerns that she might have lacked the capacity to plead. And then Judge Baker, in that opinion, went on to state that if so, it might have prompted the judge to inquire if the appellant's mental responsibility at the time of the offenses. Put differently, unusual behavior during the guilty plea may also signal that their behavior at the time of the offenses was unusual. And I would state that she really does not appreciate the serious nature of these offenses. Most accused are either very contrite during their guilty plea, that is, I'm sorry, I was wrong, or they attempt to minimize what they did.
Well, the judge specifically stated that she appeared very alert and articulate. The fact that she may have not been particularly contrite doesn't of itself indicate a lack of mental responsibility, does it? It may indicate something else, but it doesn't indicate a lack of mental responsibility in and of itself, does it?
I would respectfully disagree in the sense that it shows that she doesn't truly appreciate that what she was doing was wrong. That is, she wasn't saying, I'm really sorry that I did it, it was wrong, nor was she trying to minimize by saying, I only smoked a little bit.
Well, she may not think it was wrong. She may think smoking dope is perfectly fine, but that doesn't mean she doesn't have the capacity to know that the law says you don't do it. Isn't that what we're talking about here?
I would say that her attitude towards the drugs is another indicator to the military judge that the second prong had been triggered and he should have therefore explained the defense and given the appellant the opportunity to explain it or withdraw it.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. You'll have an opportunity to conclude during your rebuttal.
Thank you.
Counsel for the government.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Captain James Hudson, along with Colonel Denise Lynn. We represent the United States in this matter. The military judge's acceptance of appellant's plea was well within the bounds of his discretion. Appellant has not provided through evidence, testimony, or behavior a basis to question the presumption that defense counsel is competent and that appellant the same. Nor has appellant demonstrated the severity of her condition affected her ability to appreciate the nature and quality of her crimes, or that she was unable to understand and proceed and assist in her defense. Despite appellant's failure to reasonably raise this defense, the military judge recognized that the mere possibility of the defense existed, and the military judge repeatedly asked appellant during the providence inquiry whether she understood that the nature and quality of her offenses. Appellant in each instance indicated that she understood what she was doing was wrong at the time that she was committing her crimes.
If the military judge recognized there was a possibility of defense, why didn't he give the why didn't he make further inquiry into the lack of mental responsibility and instruct her on that?
Your Honor,
doesn't that trigger that? Isn't that what the test is?
It requires more than that, Your Honor. It requires that the defense be reasonably raised. At this point in the case, there was no indication the defense had been reasonably raised. Merely that because of the fact that appellant had come to the proceeding from the institution, the Bradley Center, which deals in behavioral and mental health issues.
Is that the normal way people come to courts martial?
No, Your Honor.
It's a little unusual.
It is unusual, and that in that alone triggered the mere possibility of the defense. However, the military judge correctly relied on the presumption that defense counsel was competent and the presumption that defendant was safe.
Where did the appellant go after the plea?
Your Honor, the indication is that the appellant went back to the Bradley Center. How long the individual or how long
what did the military judge sentence the appellant to?
Time served 10 days, Your Honor.
And sent her back for more treatment. Is that the usual sentence that's meted out for offenses like this? No time?
No, Your Honor, likely is not. However, again,
the military judge was sending her back for more treatment.
He was sending her back for more treatment, Your Honor, but however, there's nothing that indicates that the treatment he was sending her back for was a severe mental disease or defect. The indication was that she had emotional problems. The government stipulated prior to trial that she had bipolar condition. However, there's nothing, appellant has offered nothing to indicate that that condition is severe, nor has she offered anything on the record through evidence, testimony, or aberrant behavior that she was anyway was unable to appreciate the wrongful nature of her conduct.
I mean, I think you're probably better off focusing on that prong rather than arguing the speculative thing as to how severe her mental condition was. I mean, she had bipolar condition, she had depression, and she was hospitalized as a result, right?
Yes, Your Honor. We concede, or the government will concede, that this individual suffered from bipolar condition. And most specifically, we argue that there's nothing on the record, and the appellant introduced nothing, and it is the appellant's burden to show that she failed to appreciate the wrongful nature of the
conduct. Well, it's the appellant's burden to show if they're having to prove the defense. But at this stage, what they're challenging is the military judge's failure to explain the defense to her. So at this point, they don't have to prove anything. At this point, the burden is on you to explain to the court why it is that the military judge didn't have to explain the defense to her. And the answer is not because she didn't prove it.
Yes, Your Honor. Quite simply, in looking at the reason the military judge was not required to explain or go into greater detail with regard to lack of mental responsibility defense, the first thing we would start with is the 802 conference was held. Now, while the military judge clearly could have gone into greater detail with regard to the 802 conference, it was clear from the colloquy between the defense and the military judge that this was the issue, was at issue in the 802 conference. The military judge there evidently had discussed this possibility with the defense counsel and found that it was not applicable.
Where in his summary of the 802 conference does the military judge state that he addressed the defense of lack of mental responsibility with defense counsel?
He doesn't specifically state that, Your Honor. However, he alludes to the fact that her mental responsibility or her competency was at issue, and that was the subject matter of the 802 conference. Again, Your Honor, we would agree that the military judge certainly could have done a better job of summarizing the 802 conference. Beyond that, Your Honor, the government would very much point to appellant's behavior throughout providency. Appellant many, many times corrected misstatements of the military judge. In some instances, going into great detail with regard to with regard to her crimes, as well as to some of the statements that Ms. Davis, the judge, had made.
One concern I have here, counsel, is that there's no authority for 802 conferences in the Uniform Code of Military Justice. The code requires a verbatim record of all proceedings. And so to the extent that anything takes place in an 802 conference, are we allowed to speculate at all what went on there? Aren't we limited to the verbatim words that are put forth in the record?
Your Honor, I think there's perhaps speculation is an inappropriate way of looking at it. I think there are some inferences that can be drawn from the judge's words.
Why is it permissible to draw any inference when there's no authority for an 802 conference in the Uniform Code, when the code states that everything has to be conducted on the record in the presence of the military judge, counsel, and the accused?
Your Honor, it's a matter of context. Looking at the 802 conference and what the military judge says about that, along with appellant's behavior, along with the evaluation the defense counsel entered as mitigation evidence, along with appellant's unsworn statement and appellant's 11-5 matters, in which she indicates that she very much understood what was going on at that time. Contextually, when you look at all of these things, it becomes very clear that the individual or that the appellant did not lack mental responsibility at the time of her crimes.
When we look at the Shaw criteria, and particularly the third Shaw criteria, is it the government's position that if the defendant does not assert that he or she was unable to appreciate the wrongfulness of their actions, if they don't do that, then the military judge need not explain the defense?
Your Honor, our position would be that would be the starting point. However, we would also argue that it would be, if the defense or if it was reasonably raised, the judge still would have a requirement to look into that.
So that's just one element to look at. That's not a hard and fast criteria.
Right. Yes,
okay. Okay, isn't it likely in virtually all these cases you're not going to have the accused saying that he or she lacked mental responsibility because they've got a deal, there's a plea, they're trying to get through providency, and what will happen when these issues come up is that things are said which either do or do not trigger the military judge's responsibility to make a further inquiry.
Certainly, Your Honor, that there is that. However, at that point in time, the military judge, in looking at the entire, again, contextually, looking at the entire case, would be looking at a situation such as Harris, where you had the conflicting reports. They may be looking at situations, again, in Harris, where the individual, there's some aberrant behavior. In this particular case, there is no aberrant behavior. There are no conflicting reports. Everything indicates that this particular appellant was competent.
What, in this situation, where the individual is brought to trial from a mental health facility, she's going back to a mental health facility, she's been diagnosed with bipolar, don't you think it would have been reasonable for the military judge to say, I'm going to explain the defense of lack of mental responsibility in this particular situation?
We certainly would argue that it would have been prudent, Your Honor. However, the
prudent but not necessary.
Well, it was prudent, it was absolutely. If there are no further questions, Your Honor, I briefly conclude. Appellant knowingly, voluntarily, and intelligently pled guilty to her crimes. Appellant has not offered a substantial basis in law or fact to question her plea. Appellant has not rebutted the presumptions of competence. And appellant has not shown her condition was either severe or that it impacted her ability to appreciate the long-term nature and quality of the crime. The military judge in this case did not abuse his discretion, and this court should affirm the lower court's decision.
Thank you, counsel. Does the defense have a rebuttal?
Briefly addressing some of the points made by government counsel, Your Honor. First of all, I believe the government has overstated what we can read into the fact that Private Riddle made several corrections to the military judge about where some of the offenses occurred. That's indicative of memory, any good memory. that says nothing about her mental state. We've all probably seen a popular movie called Rain Man, where the Dustin Hoffman character has got severe autism, but can still recall things in great detail and do complex mathematical calculations. Regarding the second prong of the lack of mental responsibility test, as this court has pointed out, the second prong is itself disjunctive. So it's more than a question of whether or not the appellant can simply appreciate the wrongfulness of their actions, but also whether or not they can appreciate the quality and nature of their actions. And perhaps going back to the last question addressed to Judge Stuckey, her attitude towards these offenses is certainly indicative that she did not appreciate the quality and nature of her actions, if not the wrongfulness of them altogether.
Are you, is this all oriented toward mental responsibility, or are you arguing as well that the military judge failed to test competence to plead at the time?
It's obviously not an error we raised. I think there was a lot to be... the military judge certainly could have done a better job, particularly stating on the record why he found her to be mentally responsible, or rather competent to stand trial. These kind of conclusory statements that she appeared very competent or...
I was asking a yes or no question, but I thought I was, at least.
I'm sorry.
Are you seeking to argue that, or are you... I'm just trying to focus on what the essence of your argument is. It's not a trick.
The short answer to your question is no, we're not arguing that, Your Honor.
Or, as between the arguments, you would hope we focus on mental responsibility, not competence.
That is correct. But I would say that is the military judge's failure to explain why he concluded she was competent to stand trial is also indicative of the general lack of attention to detail in getting things on the record in this case, which the military judge is
Well, if this was all so obvious to the military judge, why wasn't the defense counsel ineffective for not raising the defense or not requesting inquiry into it?
Well, regarding raising the defense, Your Honor, Private Riddle wanted to plead guilty. Like many accused, she had a pretrial agreement. She thought it was favorable. And as this court has held, as the U.S. Supreme Court has held, that's a decision sacred for the client. And when the client says, I want to plead guilty, I want to waive all my defenses, the defense counsel has their marching orders. Now, if defense counsel thought that Private Riddle maybe lacked the capacity to stand trial, then you're right, defense counsel probably did have an obligation to raise the matter. And we're not arguing capacity, we're simply arguing the defense of lack of responsibility.
So what's the military judge to do if the judge is making inquiry and asks the accused, do you understand what you were doing at the time of the offenses? Yes, yes, yes. And defense counsel saying yes, yes, yes as well. What's the indicator that they should disregard the defense counsel's silence and the appellant's yeses?
Once again, Your Honor, I would simply state that it's the military judge's job and not the defense counsel's job to do an adequate providence inquiry. The defense counsel has no burden in that regard. The military judge is the ultimate gatekeeper when it comes to providence. So the defense counsel's silence, I don't think, can be held either for or against a private witness.
Well, I think, and I don't mean to characterize Judge Baker's question, but I think what he's asking you is, in light of the yes, yes, yes from the appellant, and in light of what is on the record during the providency inquiry, and taking that and putting it in the context of whatever happened at the 802 conference, but we at least know it was that something with respect to this was discussed, and that the defense counsel apparently satisfied the military judge that there was not an issue, and in light of the fact that the defense counsel said nothing during the course of the trial, except that this person should never have joined the Army, which I think everyone can agree on, in light of all those things, what was the military judge, why was he on notice that he needed to make further inquiry?
Even in the face of an accused.
And in the face of the appellant's apparent desire to plead guilty and waive all defenses.
Even in the face of an accused and a defense counsel who are agreeing the conduct was wrongful, the overall factual setting before the military judge created a conflict between those affirmations that she appreciated that what she was doing was wrongful, and that conflict gave rise to the military judge's duty to inquire further, because when there's a conflict set forth in the context of guilt, that is what triggers the military judge's
duty. And your best evidence of that is the arriving from the psych ward and the wacky fish.
medications, and once again, the fact that these things are close in time. Had Private Littleton in a mental institution a year before her guilty plea, I would agree that's not compelling evidence. But when she is institutionalized immediately following her misconduct, I think the only logical inference to draw is that her behavior during the misconduct is...
medications, whatever the institution is, and nothing during the plea inquiry?
I would say, once again, her flippant nature during the plea inquiry is indicative, but the strongest evidence is where she lives, the medication she's on, and the fact
and that... And that's the touchstone from which the judge should have done something more, in your view.
Coupled with her statements at the guilty plea, which at one point got the judge to say, are you feeling okay?
So just so that I'm clear, whenever an appellant, whenever a defendant is flippant during a proper inquiry, that should raise that they don't appreciate, you know, the quality or nature of their acts, and the military judge should stop everything and make inquiry?
Not just because they're flippant, but when they're flippant, they're heavily medicated, and they're living in a mental institution, I would argue that triggers the judge's responsibility. It's the totality of all these factual circumstances that trigger the judge's responsibility. I would agree that maybe a single one of the circumstances might not, but collectively they did.
Thank you, counsel. You may briefly conclude. Okay. That concludes the argument. The case is now submitted, and we appreciate the presentation of counsel for both parties. The court will be in recess until 10 minutes after 10 o'clock.